In the world of marketing and customer engagement, every company has a dream of becoming a mission-driven brand, a company that's known for something unique and compelling to their customers, and that their employees can rally around to deliver great customer service. That's an incredible element to driving a successful revenue growth path. But it's also important to understand how data and analytics and personalization and performance marketing fit into that. In today's episode of the Modern Revenue Executive, we'll be talking with Pam Poligian, the CMO of Navy Federal Credit Union. Pam's going to talk about the core mission that's at the heart of what everything that the employees of Navy Federal Credit Union do, but also the rigorous approach to data, analytics, performance marketing, and personalization that they take. With all great marketers, this combination of compelling brand and outstanding data analytics and performance is the yin and yang that makes for a successful growth path and everything that a revenue executive is looking to do. So looking forward to this conversation with Pam and hearing about the Navy Federal Credit Union team.
This episode is brought to you by Invoca. When marketing meets AI meets human conversations, revenue happens. Invoca's platform gives marketing, sales, and customer experience teams complete visibility into the buyer journey, from click to conversion, creating better experiences that drive real revenue results. Discover how modern brands are scaling revenue at Invoca.com.
Hi, Pam. Great to see you today, and thank you so much for joining the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
I like to start with talking with marketers about the things that make their brand, their company unique and special. And when I think about Navy Federal Credit Union, one of the elements that I imagine is very unique about you all is the mission and the focus around the mission, the community that you serve. And by the way, thank you for serving that community that's so important to all of us. But just to start with the audience, do you mind sharing a little bit about the nature of the mission and what you all are trying to achieve at Navy Federal Credit Union and the set of customers that you're serving?
Greg, thank you for that question. The bad news is I could talk about that this entire podcast, because what we do here is very special, and I really, really believe that. We are on a mission to serve and enrich the lives of those that serve the military, and we say military community, by providing a lifetime of guidance and support built on trust and shared values. We are open. We have a charter. So that means active duty, everybody active duty, all branches of service can join, as well as their family members. And then veterans, any veteran, as long as you left with an honorable discharge, any length of time of service, any time of service from the Korean War to current. So all veterans, as well as their families. So it is a tight, narrow field. That said, we have 15 million members, and probably about a third of the U.S. is eligible for joining. So it's narrow, but broad. And I love to talk about the shared values, because those that served, and we talk a lot about the military community, they're supported by not only their service, but their families that serve with them. So we look at that comprehensively and make sure that all of those people are eligible for membership and then also eligible for what we do here. So we feel very much as a nonprofit founded around that mission to be that preferred and trusted financial institution for military and the community. It really is a special role in the marketplace.
And when I speak to CMOs, CEOs, leaders at really mission-driven brands, typically what I hear either explicitly or I can feel the vibe and just interacting with them is that mission permeates everything the company does. I would imagine it's that way at Navy Federal Credit Union. And can you talk a little bit about that? And then also the unique role that marketing plays in clarifying that mission internally, amplifying that mission externally. Like, how does marketing, it's one thing if you're not at a mission-driven brand. I think a lot of times marketing steps into the void of creating a mission, but like you all don't have that void at your company. It's part of your whole company. So how does marketing play that unique role in such a mission-driven environment?
Greg, that's another great question, because it really is about how do we tell that story and amplify it. So I'll give you an example that's pretty basic. Our tagline is, our members of the mission. If you're an employee, that tells you we are here and we were founded around this principle on doing what's right for the member and doing what's right for the member and their financial advancement. So that might mean simple things. If I am a member service rep and I am talking to a member and I realize that they're in the wrong account, it's an active duty person that isn't an active duty checking, they could get all their rebates free. It costs us money for us to say, hey, you should actually be in this account. And by the way, if you're up for it, I'll move you now. But with a tagline, our members of the mission, that person knows that his or her job is really about doing the right thing for the person that they're interacting with, whether that's in the phone or branches or digital, et cetera. So regardless of channel or regardless of who. So I do think marketing's role is unique in that the service is what we were built on. Who we serve is also foundational in terms of what we were built on. But marketing's job is to try to tell that story. So little things like the tagline, our members of the mission, tells employees what to do. It tells the frontline what's important. It communicates to the marketplace. How do we really measure our success? And it's with our members and satisfaction, unlike investors, where I might have to report against finances every quarter. I'm really reporting against member growth, member satisfaction, and member engagement. So marketing definitely is an enabler for that to happen, and also that people understand what it means. And when I say people, that is both the frontline as well as members outside. Any brand that has a service differentiator, making the objective and mission and focus really clear to that frontline is really important, because you cannot create enough user manuals to think about every scenario.
Yeah.
So you've got to give somebody the criteria to make the right decision. And that's where ours is really comes back to the member and acting in their best behalf. So marketing's job is really to kind of build that bridge between what it is we already do and telling the story, and as well as helping operationalize it.
I mean, you summarized it perfectly, and I would say succinctly. To me, the top tier mission-driven brands versus more normal mission-driven brands, the differentiator for me is a mission-driven brand, the external audience will understand the value proposition, you'll understand what that means. But if you can get to the clarity of providing guidance for employees, I love your example, like I don't need to give you a 2,000-page employee handbook. I can give you clarity on the company's mission, and that becomes a decision framework that you can independently and autonomously go apply to make the right decision in any given perspective. That for me is what creates this sort of cream of the crop delineation between companies that are pretty good at this and companies that are really amazing at it. Because to your point, then it really comes through in every bit of service and every bit of touch point that you have, you know, with a prospective customer or an existing customer.
Yeah. And so you're exactly right. One story I love telling is all of our executives, which I also think is a common thing for mission-based companies that are doing well, encourage executives to spend time with the frontline. And here we have that expectation that executives are spending time in a regular basis, listening to calls, going to branches, overlooking social feedback in terms of what exactly do our members say. And I, for the marketing department, we've talked about how do we listen loudly, listen to what people are saying, but also listen to what they're not saying. And the example, a couple months ago, I was sitting with a member service rep listening to calls. We answer about 1 million calls a week, all stateside, 24/7. But I'm sitting next to one of those lovely individuals. And believe me, they're trained, and I have a lot of respect for what they do in terms of listening loudly to our members and meeting their needs. So at the end of the call, the member service rep asked the member, is there anything else I can do for you? And the gentleman pipes up right away and says, yes. I'm wondering, does the post office still sell stamps via mail? We are not connected to the post office.
Yeah.
We both, you could talk about similarities, but that's not our business. So I'm waiting for her to say, I really don't know. You know, I see her pull up a browser, go to the U.S. Post Office site and say, Greg, actually they do. And I'm going to send you the link now on how you could order stamps through them. She hangs up the phone. And I sat there, and it's such a simple thing. It's not about banking. It's not about his financial health. But when he said, is there anything else I can help you with? She listened to him.
Yeah.
She sent him some information that was really easy for him to do. But if we were a different type of place where our metric was how fast can she get him off the phone,
there's
no way the member service rep would have done that. So the fact that that happened, and that happens on a regular basis, just makes me feel good about we really are living and fulfilling that promise to show members that they really are the mission. I can help you. I know the answer to that question, or I know where I can get the answer to that question.
Yeah. And I mean, the amazing thing, too, I think creates that delineation is she didn't have to search around to page 1084 in the employee book to figure out the answer. She knows in her DNA, she knows in her gut, she knows in her response immediately of like, what's the right thing to do? And like providing that level of clarity for employees just must be an amazing unlock for you all as an organization.
It's an unlock, but truly is an enabler because, like I said, you're helping them. And she doesn't have to document why she was longer on the call. Like, it's really just you were doing the right thing. So I think for every brand that's trying to think about how they operationalize their metric, their mission, it probably behooves them to take, because it does us too, some time to look back, pull back, and look at your metrics. And for us, like, a metric at the top of the pyramid is member satisfaction. And we report that, we measure it in the field all the time, and we report it out enterprise-wide. So our 23,000 employees, you could ask at any given time, what is this member satisfaction for the month? And they will know the metric. And they will know it probably specifically to their channel, where they work, or their business group. And we feel like we have to be careful about setting the metrics that do connect back to making that real versus another metric that might be either harder to measure, harder to understand. So for us, member satisfaction is at the top of the pyramid. And then from there, we look at engagement with products and services. We look at growth in terms of new members. But job one is attracting new members and making sure that they are satisfied and that we're meeting their needs.
Yeah, and I'm a big believer. And if you get the right level of alignment and spend the time up front around, you know, what's meaningful and important for employee, what's meaningful and important for a management team, executive team. If you're a for-profit company, what's meaningful and important for your investors, for your board. The more you can line those things up, the faster just everything goes. You know, one thing that's got to be interesting in the world of marketing is you all have a very well-defined, if I'm being optimistic, or potentially limited if you're being pessimistic or worrying about it, sort of set of prospective members that you can go after. Can you talk a little bit about what having that sort of finite audience to try to message to, what in what ways is that beneficial as a marketer? In what ways is that challenging as a marketer? How do you overcome some of the challenges as you work through that with your team?
Well, it is both. And I tell our team this, and I work with our CFO, and I often tell him, you know, when they'll say, what's your budget? And I'm like, well, the level of investment is this. And then I look at him and I know that with investment, there's an expected return. So with that return, and we have metrics both in terms of brand metrics as well as performance metrics on our engagement and pull through on product acquisition. So I call that brand performance. And I told him that that's one word. We can't separate them. So we have to do both because you have to have you have to know us before you can love us, before you can do business with us. But the focus on it is really critical because, as I mentioned, we have 15 million members. Over a third of the country is eligible to join. So that being said, if you look at our messaging, there's a lot about eligibility, who can serve and who is, sometimes because of the name. We are 91 years old. We were founded around serving the Navy and Marines. There's some people, because of our name, will think it's that.
Yeah.
There are others that know that we have served Army, Air Force, Coast Guard, DOD contractors for decades. And also their family. So there's a lot of that legacy of service, but bringing that forward. So we really start all of our media evaluations with, is our audience there? And it's harder to measure. Active duty is concentrated in a lot of selected markets where they're stationed. As soon as you look at veterans, they're everywhere.
Yeah.
So, and a veteran can be somebody that served long ago and is now an accountant in Cleveland. So away from an active duty station and with a job that may not be clear that he or she is a veteran. So we really try to look at a concentration of that, where we can find veterans and we're from an audience state where we know they're at. And then it comes down to shared values. I mean, we are the military appreciation partner for the National Hockey League. And some people might say, why hockey? Well, hockey does really well with veterans, young and old, as well as active duty. But it has those shared work hard, play hard, honesty, community values. And so it feels like the right place for us to show up. Some of the assessment is about the just dollars per reach. And then the other becomes that alignment, because we want to make sure that we're contextually where our members are. So that can be where they go for fun the sports they watch, the things that they spend time with, as well as the products that they need. So in places that might be more aggregate sites on how, where best place to buy an auto or car, best place to find a home. You know, we're the fifth largest VA lender in the nation. And we try to make sure that we're at the places that veterans are going. That's a benefit that they had as part of their service. So when they're looking to use that, they'll also want to partner with someone like us who knows what we're doing in the space. So we try to make sure that we're there contextually for those type of environments, as well as the ones that reach the broader pieces. And some of it is a little bit more of just showing up with a shared value. The family that is eligible to join, let's face it, they all have a lot of respect for the service, depending on if they were in that nuclear family unit when that person was serving, they did serve. And if they didn't, if they were a sibling or maybe a parent of the one that served, they still have a lot of respect for it. So that's also part of our community and part of those that can join. I talk about that as a true credit union, because that's founding with a field of membership. But then it does have some unique focus. I'm going to say assets for us as a brand. Showing up in the places we need to be, showing up. We call our media plan following the eyeballs. We're looking at where those people are and then following them in terms of their hearts, where they invest their time and their energy, if you will.
One question for you is someone who is one part consumer, one, I can't call myself a practicing marketer, but I'm somebody who thinks about marketing and commerce and revenue a lot. My impression of you all as a brand, just based on my own consumer experience, is I feel like over the, call it like the past decade, and to clarify, like I did not serve myself. My father was in the military, so I've been exposed to Navy Federal Credit Union through that. My impression of you all as a brand is if I go back 10 or 15 years, my touch points with you tended to be more in places that were highly one-to-one, highly segmented, where, like, I think about direct mail, right? Like, where you probably have the ability to understand that I am qualified, that I can be a Navy Federal Credit Union member. And I feel like over the past decade, I've been bumping into the brand in more heterogeneous audiences, like live sports, for example, where you know you can reach a much broader set of people. You know you've got critical mass of members and potential members there, but you also have a mixed audience. And so back to your point, you have to spend time clarifying for the audience who's relevant, who's not relevant. A, is that evolution true as you all have thought about your marketing mix and who you're speaking to? And then as somebody who has to think about performance and ROI, how have you all thought about the combination of that highly targeted, we know we're talking to a prospective member audience versus a world where we can speak to much bigger sets of people and numbers, but we know there's, you know, not every single person in that audience is going to be relevant for us, but we're making the reach versus, you know, sort of target segmentation. I'd love to hear how you think about that as a marketer.
Greg, I love your perspective of our history, because you are exactly right. It started with literally base newspapers, because if you were on the base, you clearly were active duty and war eligible. So we did a lot of that. And then we expanded to being other. But I also will say our branch footprint, you can tell that over 80 of our branches are on a base, meaning if you don't have access to the base, you can't use that branch. And I don't think that's true for other financial providers. Now, a lot of benefits come with that, because those base branches, they can be very specific with the types of financial education as well as the types of programs that those members need. So think about permanent change of station. Military people will call that PCSing. The rest of the world is moving less. Military still moves more than the average American, so that's more relevant to them. So us talking about those places, and particularly on those base locations, which is much more of a one-to-one, who really cares the most about that? Moving support probably doesn't feel as relevant to other careers as it does to that. And I say and on purpose, because it is about that. But the veteran, yes, the veteran often still does have base access, but it may be less relevant to what they're doing now and less relevant to their family now. So they live everywhere. When we looked at concentrations of veterans across the United States, we see major markets, the New York, Chicago's, LA, San Diego's of the world show up. San Diego's a little bit different because that also is a duty station. So places show up that are never duty stations. And then a lot of places like Atlanta is really done a great job. It's a market that's growing. It's one of our biggest markets, and it's almost 100% veterans. So we're in those broader based environments for those veterans, because that is the broader community. And we know that we've got to talk to them. And the reason we're there in live sports is that's still what people are watching live. And it's also still a lot of good family viewing and a lot of passionate around rooting for your team, wherever your team may be. As you've moved, you sometimes have moved your allegiance to a new team or sometimes stay with your old team, but you still are engaged with the sports that you care about. So we do buy a lot of sports because that's really just where the eyeballs are and the efficiency is there, truthfully. And then we do a lot of programs specific to both veterans and active duty to make sure they know that we're relevant to them regardless of their lifestyle. So somebody that's 18, 19 showing up to serve for the first time, they have a lot of needs financially. So being there to help them get started on a good track record, as well as a veteran who may be adding to their digital products. They're starting to do more investing. They're starting to make sure, too, that we're staying relevant as they grow, seeing that we've been able to grow with them and meet their different needs. So that's why the media plan has evolved, too, from things that were very focused on active duty and the service channel, the branches that I talked about, to things that are much broader, the call center. As I mentioned, you know, probably about 70% of the calls come from people that were joined as a family member, not necessarily joined as, but they joined because they're connected to a veteran or an active duty person.
It's also interesting as I see sort of the footprint of financial services institutions broadly kind of evolving and changing, where like the role of the branch is changing. The role of the mobile app is changing. The role of the contact center is changing. The role of the website is changing. And I feel like there's a little bit of a sort of a refactoring of what channel you use for what happening in financial services. And especially as you start to scale as an organization like you all have. It's funny, we started this conversation talking about, you know, mission and how do you motivate employees? And people may think like, oh, Pam's sort of a fluffy qualitative CMO. And you're like, the beauty of marketing is you have to be good at qualitative and you got to be good at quant. So how do you all blend this mix of, you know, you want to provide obviously incredible service. That's a core part of your differentiation. You want to understand how people want to interact. I'm sure like every marketer out there, you're thinking about as the world is moving towards more digital, more AI, how do I lean into that as well? But how do you think about sort of the variety of all these different touch points and how you engage with your members and your prospective members in this world that's just increasingly complex?
It is increasingly complex and it's increasingly fragmented. And I think about, you know, an 18-year-old in the mix as well as a 45-year-old. And we don't do any targeting by age, but just think about the media habits of those different audiences.
Yep.
So, and they both have financial needs that we can meet. So we try to make sure that we're talking to the right member. First of all, the right prospect. So somebody that is eligible to join, and then the right member with the right products. So you probably have heard this from other financial providers, but we are all on the road to personalization at scale. The more we can personalize our messaging, the better off typically our results are. So that said, we can't afford, I would think, even with AI, it's very hard for somebody to do 15 million versions of anything that they produce. And if they did, I question, like, what exactly does that brand look like? And how does it have that commonality? And how does it pull together? So the personalization scale is like, how do we use the data about what we know about that member and make sure we're relevant to what we're talking to them about? And, you know, I'll use the government shutdown recently. We knew our active duty members were impacted, but we also knew everybody who had a check coming from the government was impacted. Well, when we did our government shutdown program, we allowed all of our members to apply for no interest loans that if they had their direct deposit with us and they were sending their pay to us, we would basically give them a loan for that amount during the shutdown.
And Pam, let me interject really quickly. If you know, I just want to make sure this is clear because this example is incredibly powerful to me. So I'm, you know, let's say I'm working for the Department of Veterans Affairs.
Let's say you work for the FDA.
Or, like, yeah, any governmental institution.
Correct.
So sort of the Venn diagram of I work for a governmental institution and I have Navy Federal Credit Union as one of my financial services partners. And then you all perform this magic that you're about to go describe.
Yes. And I will say my point was about relevance because it was magic for those that needed it. So for us, it was like, you signed up for the program, you know, I'm going to be impacted. You already have your direct deposit with us, so we know what you should be paid.
Yeah.
You're not getting paid.
Yeah.
So when you signed up and said, I want to participate in the program, we basically gave you an interest-free loan during that time period. And then when you get paid, we get paid. And for our members, that was meaningful. But think about, to your point about relevance, we didn't just do that for active duty. We did that for active duty. Now, in this current shutdown scenario, there was a lot of confirmation that active duty was going to get paid. It was the other government agencies that weren't going to get paid. So because of who we serve and because of our veteran base, we said, everybody who is going to be impacted that signs up for this program, we're going to honor it. It's not about which federal agencies qualify and which ones don't. It's like, if you are impacted and you're not getting paid, you could sign up for this program and we'll cover your pay during the shutdown. And our ability to show up and serve for people like that, think about it. It keeps people away from, I mean, I sat with a member service rep on a phone call and heard a mom talk about, I can buy my kids school supplies and afford their lunch and not worry about my mortgage payment this month. All those were things that I pay for out of my paycheck. And they didn't have to tap into their savings or their investments in order to cover these immediate expenses. So we do programs like that because of who we serve. And I think if we were everybody and anybody, it's harder to show up and say, how are we going to help? Where ours is very focused on how do we show up and help is like, well, what's important to our members?
I don't know how anybody who is facing uncertainty of where they're going to pay for their next meal, their mortgage, you know, get their kids what they need for school or sports, and your bank comes to you and says, I got you. How do you ever think about changing your bank again? I mean, that's just an incredibly powerful story. And the interesting thing about what you said on that is that wasn't sort of something that you all did by hanging out a human being, kind of offering people one-to-one, do you want to do this? You took the data and the analytics, you knew from a data perspective who's eligible and who wasn't, to your point around personalization. So you were able to go activate that at scale across your customer base. And yeah, I mean, that strikes me as the type of thing that even most mission-driven companies would not be capable of doing. They might be capable of it in terms of the data, but in terms of leaning in and solving the broader customer problem, where can I go get stamps for my local post office problem, that's insane.
Well, think about it too, Greg. Yes, we could do a lot of personalized marketing, but because of who we serve, we could put it on the website. And if you weren't one of those federal employees that were impacted, if you're a member here, you probably still care about those people.
Yeah.
So it wasn't one of those where somebody was like, I mean, corporate communications is part of my group. We did not have a single member call us and say, why the heck are you doing this?
Yeah.
People understood. And it wasn't, why do I not qualify? It's like, well, you're getting a paycheck.
Yeah.
These others aren't. So, and our members do appreciate that. So we can be highly relevant. We can be very targeted. But because of who we serve, we can show up and talk about it in broader places like the website and announce it in, you know, our media relations as well and on social media. It's not a secret that we do this program.
And to your point, in today's world, social media, word of mouth, referral, organic, I mean, those stories are incredibly, incredibly powerful from a long-term brand perspective. So yeah, it's interesting to think about how the combination of sort of quantitative data, precision, personalization, qualitative, emotion, mission, brand, experiential, how those things tie together. One of the stories of that, elements of that story that's kind of coming alive is I talk to a lot of marketers who, in the more challenging macroeconomic environment of the past few years, have been charged by leadership teams, board, CEOs, to maybe expand their remit a little bit. And whereas a few years ago, it was customer acquisition, customer acquisition, customer acquisition, customer acquisition. Do I say it 5 times? Do I say it 10 times? Do I say it 20 times? We've seen a lot of marketing organizations and teams get more involved in kind of full customer lifecycle marketing and experience. Obviously, at a financial institution, from the business model, that's a really important thing. But do you mind sort of sharing how has that role evolved for you and your team at Navy Federal Credit Union? And, you know, obviously this example of providing financial support and assistance during the government shutdown That's not a tactic designed to get you net new customers out of the gate. That's more supporting your existing ones. But how has the remit of marketing evolved and changed over the past few years from an acquisition to an acquisition plus kind of mindset?
Well, Greg, you hit on the key word plus. And I say plus because this is also a math equation, and that it is for us, it's about value, the value that we deliver back to the members, which often is member dollars that they save, tangible reasons, as well as the values. And it's hard to do one without the other. If we're only a good deal, then we will attract those that are always shopping for the next great deal. And if we don't talk about the values that we have as a credit union and our commitment to financial education and financial betterment, then it's hard for you to realize, do you have that alignment? So here, the job of the marketing department has grown in that we are both storytellers to bring those stories to life. One of the things that is a challenge, if you are a service brand, it's really hard for prospects to know that because mm-hmm. they can't experience the service unless they already bank with you. We can say that on behalf of the brand, but do you believe us or do you believe somebody that has actually banked with us? So because of that, you can see actual customer ratings. And in our case, we always say members because everybody's a member to do any interactions with us. For 13 products and services visible on the website. So don't listen to me. Listen to what other people who have already used the product say about it. So that's an important part of the equation to pull through. You mentioned influencers. Influencers are that third-party endorsement, awards, recognition, third-party endorsement. So all of those play a part in terms of earning the respect that has to be, and also convincing someone that your service might be a little bit different. It is on a member basis, though, what's important to you, because you were mentioning, like, in this day where more and more people are migrating toward digital service, of our 15 million members, only 20% in the course of a year will have only used digital. The other 80% in the course of the year will also have engaged with another channel. That other channel might be the call center or branch, which are both human live individuals, or it could have been online banking. It could have been the vast majority of people, you want the selection and being able to choose what you need based on your need. Often, digital is the answer. It's much more efficient. It's fast. It's 24/7. I can get the answers I need about my account. If I need some expertise and I want to talk to somebody, I might want to go in and talk to somebody individually. I might want to ask a very complicated question to somebody in the call center. So being able to have a model that offers those up, but allowing that 18-year-old to select their service channels as well as a developed and more mature veteran who has maybe more advanced needs and more advanced questions to ask, they may want to interact with the human. So we do talk about the physical and digital, that fiscal together, the same way we talk about brand and performance together, and we talk about value and values together. So as I mentioned, there's a lot of those equations that are all at part, are like play at doing the right thing.
Yeah, it's a fascinating topic. We work with a lot of marketing and revenue teams in verticals like telecommunications, property and casualty insurance, financial services. And this idea of, I have a customer who's an 18-year-old that gets tons of their information via TikTok, who prefers to SMS, doesn't really ever want to talk to anybody on the phone. And then I've got somebody who might be, late 40s, early 50s, who just has a completely different channel of preference for information selection, but as well for engagement. And I guess the beauty these days is with data and AI, you at least have data across all those things. And so it's not as much of the guessing game. You can sort of look at, you clearly have a good understanding of what channels consumers are engaging with when of various types. But ultimately, it just, there's data behind it to understand what you're doing, how your channels are performing, et cetera.
Data is really the fuel. And I think the more we can use it to make data-informed decisions, the better off we are without a lot of putting our hand on the scale on what our hypothesis is. Because just like you were talking about, an age differentiation could drive a channel preference. I'll give you a data fact. In that when consumers as a whole, so not Navy Federal members, are asked about the probability of their information being stolen or whatever, over 50% will say, yeah, it's highly likely. when you look at who does what with that fact, there are some that become much more stewards of their data and asking themselves, how do they protect themselves? How are they making sure that they're keeping themselves away from fraud and scams, really being alert? There's another portion of the data that says it's going to happen, so I'll just be ready when it happens. So how can the same factor really drive people two very different ways? So we try to use our data on what we know about the member and what they've interacted with. So in that case, like, have they actually looked at fraud tips? Have they set a password? Have they done? And if they haven't, how do we intervene on their behalf? And the ones that have, we just need to tell them what we're doing. We can tell they're doing their part. So how do we change the message based on what we know that that member needs as a nudge, or what we call an insight? So we do an insight program, which is very much about a data point we know about a member. And it can be something that we observe. It can be a product that they need. It can be something that they even have, and they may not even be utilizing it. It can be a subscription that they have that they've forgotten about. So we have a program where they can go through and see all the program, the subscriptions they own. And what of that, they can do their own evaluation on what they want to keep and what they don't. So we use our insights program to get in front of a member on a personalized basis and tell them something we know about them with an advice or a tip. And those, some of them are very much information. Your credit score changed and here's what it is. And here's a link to Credit Confidence so that you can use the simulator to do what you might want to think about different choices. Or it could be something that is, you have this product, but you really should be this, like right sizing in that middle bucket. Or it can be something that they need something where we're really trying to get them into a new product or service. So all, and our insights program has all of those needs. As a nonprofit, it doesn't have to all be about selling a next product. And think about a relationship brand. If I only talk to you when I need to sell you something, how often do you want to talk to me?
Yeah,
so we make sure that we're having those conversations that if we were humans talking to each other, we would.
Yeah, I mean, that last point, I think, illustrated the fact that for a modern marketing revenue leader, you've got to be good at so many different things. Like, I call this like the both and challenge. You can't be good at digital or physical. You have to do both. You can't be good at brand or performance. You have to do both. You can't do human engagement or digital and AI, you have to do both.
You have to do both.
That's part of the, I think the fun of the intellectual stimulation of the job. And again, back to your earlier point, is when you serve multiple segments and audiences broadly, then you have to do multiple different things. And that's what makes life and work interesting. Well, good. Well, thank you for the time. A couple last questions for you. Number one, have there been any books, blogs, podcasts, or things that you've read, you've been inspired by, that you'd like to share with the audience that you think they could learn an interesting insight or a nugget in the same way that you have?
Well, I'm a nerd, and I confess in that my bedtime reading will often have a business book, and then will also then have a just brain-relaxing thought. But I will read things like to me, Atomic Habits is a great book, and kind of thinking about how we as brands, how we can help our members or customers make the right habits and the power of a habit. Leaders, Simon Sinek's book, Leaders Eat Last, I think talks about that servant leadership. And it also has a lot in there in terms of what we've called listen loudly. Like that eating last just isn't your place in the line. It's being part of the group and part of the communities that you serve. Thinking fast to go slow, which I think is really what we're all trying to do with AI. And the slow part is really just relevant to maybe a smaller audience, but more relevant. And I have to give you a really old one, but I have to tell you it was one of the ones that probably made me into a data geek, and that's Freakonomics.
Yeah.
And Freakonomics just showed what you think is logical might not be, or it's not logical to everybody. So don't make the assumptions for everybody based on what you think. But Freakonomics for me was one of those books that I read probably several times just to go through, what happened? The unintended consequences. And it probably gave me an appetite for testing early and often. And, you know, here we are always in the market with different tests because we need to learn, and we need to learn from our members.
Yeah, well, this is pretty much a podcast for nerds. So I'm a nerd, opening caveat is all fine. And then last one, which is a little bit more personal. Where is a travel destination that you're looking for? Maybe you've got plans to go somewhere soon, or you aspire to go somewhere soon. What's something that you'd like to experience in the world that you're thinking about?
I'm happy that we're doing this, but I'm also embarrassed to admit that this took us 6 years to do it. We planned a trip throughout Europe with four different countries the year COVID hit. And needless to say, we couldn't do it. We moved the itinerary a year forward, didn't cancel anything, didn't get our money back. And then we were like, oh, that's not going to happen. And then life got busy. And so we haven't taken that trip, but in 2026, we're doing that trip. So we're going to Sweden, we're going to Norway, we're going to Latvia and Austria.
Oh, that sounds great. I just had a colleague who is in the Nordics and sent me pictures from the fjords in Norway and said it was an absolutely awesome trip. So I imagine that you will have a good time. Well, Pam, hey, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate it. Thank you to you, your team, the broader Navy Federal Credit Union organization, for serving the audience that you do, the members that you do, the community that's so important to us and our broader country. And I really enjoyed the tips and like definitely lots of things that we'll take away from this and go apply ourselves and to some of the other audience members in terms of how they run their marketing, commerce, and revenue teams. So thank you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. It was great to talk to you.
All right. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Modern Revenue Executive. Links to any resources mentioned in this episode are in the show notes below. If you enjoyed this show, please give us a 5-star review and don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes.